Welcome to the Penny and Pops podcast. He's Spencer Penny Strode. I'm Adam Pops Papa Giorgio. We did it, man. Game seven. It's on, baby. Game seven. It got a little scary there during game six, but the Magic, they pulled it out 103-96. Their young core of Paolo Banchero, Franz Wagner, and Jalen Suggs, they dropped over 20 points each. There's some historic ramifications involved with that. But in this just awesome season, it continues at least another game. Game 7 in Cleveland, Sunday, ABC, 1 p.m. The Magic are the only game on the NBA schedule on Sunday. And it's just another opportunity for the guys to just show off how great they can be. It's going to be our first ABC game since February of 2012. Let's go.
Hardaway, straight down the lane, the power jam. Point guard on a 7'6 guy. Here's Lewis turning and he shoots. Yes! With four and 1/10 seconds to go.
Here's Turkaloo for the win.
All right, we are recording this live Friday night, May 3rd. It's past 11 o'clock at night. We just got done with game six at the Kia Center. We also took a bit of a pit stop at the basement Wall Street real quick. But we are now at Hourglass to quickly get a pot in here before they close here at midnight. But real quick before we get into all this, Michael Carter Williams' Players Tribune piece was very, very good. Go read it. There's some good stuff, and I'm glad his life's a lot better right now since he found the Magic. That's awesome for him. The Celtics, they eliminated the Heat on Wednesday, which meant that our game six was Friday at 7 p.m. on ESPN instead of 8 p.m. ESPN2, so a lot of the national public got to see, I guess what we'll call it, as the magical trio at the moment of Paolo, Franz, and Suggs do their job. Because, yeah, I mean, we got primetime exposure in what was a win that... Penny, do you think we got lucky with this game a little bit? Because I'm going to be really honest, like, especially how the third played out and even early in the fourth, I didn't think we deserved to win the game at that point.
No, it didn't feel good at halftime, and we'll get into the game in great detail. But I think it's fair to say that you're a little bit of a steal here just based on the Cleveland's three-point shooting percentage specifically in the first half. And then you made a comment during the game in the second half, like they only made three threes, but it felt like they made a bunch of daggers. So really happy to get this win and happy that we didn't push all our chips in here and there's still a lot left for game seven.
Yeah, they made like 1-3 in the first half, and then I think, I don't know, 4 or 5 in the second maybe. It wasn't as many as it felt because some of those threes were pretty timely in the second half. But, yeah, so we'll talk about Game 7, but Game 7 is Sunday, 1 p.m. on ABC. Depending on what happens with the Clipper-Mavericks game that's going on right now, we might be the only Game 7 and only game on Sunday. So literally all the attention could be on the Magic, which is awesome for recruiting purposes, just for the popularity of the guys, the team, etc. But because Sunday's game is on ABC, tonight's Game 6 was the last time that we were going to get David, Jeff, and Dante and the Bally Sports crew for the season, because ABC games aren't allowed to be broadcasted on local TV, and there's no local TV on the in the second round. So yeah, that comes with the territory there. Gary Harris, he went through walkthrough portion of practice, so he didn't even get to practice on Thursday. He just went through the walkthrough portion of it. It seemed like he and Jared Allen would be game time decisions, which they were. Both of them were questionable. Neither played. Gary Harris looks like he's probably done for the series because of just that calf strain that he's got. Or maybe he'll magically play Sunday. Who knows? Whereas Jared Allen, It felt like it was one of those where he could have played with that rib contusion, but because they played so well without him in Game 5, they probably just saved him, and maybe we'll see Jared Allen Game 7. All right, Game 6, Penny. This was the biggest Magic game, maybe the also the biggest Magic Game 6 because it's been the latest Magic Game 6 since 2011, where we lost a heartbreaker in Atlanta 84-81 that saw us get upset. Thanks, Mike Bianchi. Still don't forgive you for that stuff, man. But you hoped for, obviously, a different result tonight than that 2011 Game 6, and we got it. Dan Savage, in his piece previewing the game, compared the differences between our bench at home versus on the road. At home, coming into tonight, the Magic's reserves were posting 44.5 points per outing while shooting 52% from the field and 40% from deep, which was awesome. While on the road, those numbers dipped to 23 points per contest while shooting 35% from the field and 22% from three, which is garbage. And tonight we didn't get much from the bench tonight, and we still survived it, Penny. But you know, I'm just kind of going through the rundown here real quick. Rashard Lewis and Dwight Howard were in the building tonight, and obviously both those guys were instrumental in us knocking off LeBron James' Cleveland Cavaliers in 2009. We can talk Dwight and Rashard now. So we knew before the game that Rashard was going to be there, but Dwight was kind of a surprise. He kind of showed up, and look, he's still trying to find that last NBA contract at least, but we saw before the game that he was on good terms with Alex Martins and the DeVos family, and I'm not expecting this to lead to a contract, nor should anyone, but from a Magic retirement perspective, a Magic Hall of Fame perspective, like a jersey retirement perspective, like Dwight's has had the greatest Magic career of any other Magic player in history. Like, he has the greatest Magic career of all time, and he had not been back as a spectator since he left the team in 2012. Obviously, when he was on other teams and we were facing him, we played him, but this was his first time in this building, the building that got built mostly because of Dwight Howard, then the Amway Center, now the Kia Center. This is the first time he's been in that building since 2012, basically, on magical terms, we'll call it. And, you know, he got introduced. He got that standing ovation midway through the first quarter where they did the highlight package video of both Dwight, his 40-point closeout Game 6 in 2009 against the Cavaliers, and then also Rashard Lewis, who hit the clutch three-pointer. He had a couple clutch three-pointers, both Game 1, I think it was Game 4 for us in that Cavs series. The Magic PR folks, they did a good job of kind of protecting Dwight from boos potentially by getting Rashard out there. But throughout the game, Dwight is super interested in the game. He's super into the game. At one point late in the fourth, stuff is like picking Dwight up and taking him to half court and squatting him. But, no matter kind of what grievances or what type of sour feelings you might have till Dwight, it was pretty cool to have him back and Rashard back, right?
Yeah, very cool. Obviously adds to the atmosphere and the environment. And then on Dwight's part, I mean, pretty much since his second stint with the Lakers and I guess Kobe's death, he appears to have matured quite a bit and has been trying to reconcile. Obviously, he had Jameer help him with the dunk contest, and clearly him and Rashard were interacting tonight. He spent time at the, you know, for the Kim Van Gundy celebration of life. So he's been doing his part to kind of get back in good graces. And look, there's so much history there. It's nice to see him in the building on good terms with everybody.
Yeah. Also, Mike Miller was here. Obviously, he is the agent for both Paolo Banchero and I think still Wendell Carter Jr. He's his agent as well. But fun fact, so we were sitting in section 109A tonight. The guy next to me is the brother of the producer of Mike Miller's podcast, and he said Dwight Howard is going to be on Mike Miller's podcast next week. So that's quite that should be pretty fun to listen to, and I'm assuming there's going to be a lot of Magic stuff involved with that. So yeah, I don't know if this is just Magic PR that kind of got it all together, because Dwight obviously wasn't around for any of the official 35th anniversary stuff, or obviously definitely Shaq's, you know, retirement ceremony. Not that he would, because he didn't play with them anyway, but you know, this is the first time we've seen Dwight involved with the 35th anniversary stuff. And yeah, it was cool to have him there. And You know, he was much more into it than Shaq was, I would say, if we're comparing visits anyway, because Dwight was really, really into it all. And it's cool. I mean, he's still like a big kid, and obviously he's got kind of legal issues that he's got to deal with as well. But just from put all that to the side, Dwight Howard, Orlando Magic, organization, fan base, team, just cool to just kind of have that reunion interaction from a historical perspective, at least. All right, the game a little bit here more. So officiating crew, Mark Davis, Josh Tiven, Gediminas Petraitis, who I didn't want to see a Lithuanian ref because of, you know, Zydrunas Ilgauskas had that long career with the Cavs, and I don't know. I thought the officiating wasn't great tonight. I could have been way worse, but there were some key moments where, especially in the third quarter, where the game was kind of slipping away from us, where the refs didn't really help us out. But, yeah, I already mentioned Gary Harris and Jared Allen were out. How surprised were you with Bickerstaff and the Cavs starting Marcus Morris instead of Okoro, and then George Niang gets minutes tonight? And, like, he made a shot or two, I think, but he clearly was a negative on the floor for the Cavs again. Like, he helped the Magic. Like, there's no getting around it, right?
Yeah, I mean, he made a three, I guess. But any time that Niang is on the floor, it feels like you have somebody to target, which obviously the Magic were struggling offensively quite a bit. Well, that's not true. They made a bunch of threes, but struggling to get quality looks. And Niang on the floor makes it a lot easier. And also, I think, ratchets up the intensity because he gets under everyone's skin and pisses them off and, you know, leads to net negatives there. I was shocked after how game five went for the Cavs because it felt like they found something with one big, kind of spread the floor a little bit. Why you would alter both the starting lineup and the substitution patterns, and thankfully they did. And, I can say it bit them here.
Yeah, no, for sure. Like, it was almost like a lifeline at some point in some points for us, but I don't know what he's going to do for game seven now, because he shouldn't have fucked around with the game six lineup, and he did. And it ended up biting, despite him getting 50 points out of Donovan Mitchell, which we'll get to that too. But the Magic, Jamal Mosley, we basically knew there was four options that were going to start rather than Gary Harris. They were Markel Fultz, Jonathan Isaac, Anthony Black, who hasn't had really meaningful minutes, and Caleb Houston was my fourth in there. You thought Fultz would start. I thought Caleb Houston would start. I wanted Anthony Black to start, and we basically got none of them because it was Jonathan Isaac who started, even though we've seen now that, especially when it's Wendell starting out there, that starting Isaac in between him and Paolo and sliding Franz to the two, it's kind of like a negative, and it takes from the bench. And we almost learned a really, really harsh lesson tonight. Thankfully, we pulled it out. But, like, how surprised were you that Isaac started? Mosley did adjust and go away from him a little bit later as the game went on. That was one of the few adjustments that he did that was actually good. But there's no way he starts game seven, right? I mean, I'm assuming Gary Harris isn't around, but there's no way Isaac can start game seven, right?
I don't even know what to say. I feel like Mosley will keep the same starting lineup in game seven. But, you know, we've talked all series about after the lineup change in game three that you're trying to maximize the J.I. minutes, and it's very clear that he's maximized playing with kind of the staggered lineups and the bench lineups, and for some reason the efficiency's not as high. Certainly, you know, we all remember the Milwaukee game 82 where he played pretty much close to 30 minutes and was incredible. But the fit hasn't been there, not offensively, and you can argue that, you know, Markel's not giving you spacing offensively either, but at least he's more capable of driving to attack the closeouts and things like that that Isaac really can't do.
I mean, that's pretty well said, and just based off that, like, Isaac can't start. Like, Jonathan Isaac can play 25-30 minutes game seven. He just can't start. It just does not work. Like, it's fine to finish the game potentially in instances, but to start, it's just it does not work for this series, for this matchup. It should work better in other matches, but just with this Cleveland team, it's not quite working. So, all right, the game itself. So, Franz Wagner started out the game with 7 early points for us. Like, he got us going. That was great, including hitting a 3. The Cavs, as we would see most of the entire night, were getting to the rim way too easily. And I hope this helps Magic fans recognize how valuable Gary Harris's perimeter defense is, because basically whoever Suggs wasn't guarding, that includes, so like Franz had trouble keeping in front of Garland and Mitchell, which Franz, great defender, but just these guys are elite scorers that are a lot tougher and quicker, or that are a lot, you know, speedier, quicker, that it's not fair for a 6'10 Franz to chase around. You know, you're negating Franz's kind of impact in that regard. So we were dealing with that for the vast majority of the night, and that was very frustrating. Strus was hot in the first half. Can't say that in the second half, thank God. Suggs, he had this tough three-pointer and then drained what looked like a 40-footer, basically, to make it 15-15 midway through the first. So the Magic were hitting threes, because Wendell then hits a corner three, and then Suggs had a really nice pass down low to Franz. We were up 22-17. At that point, that's when Rashard and Dwight got rolled out. So we're moving. The arena's moving, rocking pretty well at that point. George Niang, first quarter minutes, out of the blue. It's stunning that Bickerstaff threw him in here. Thank you, JB Bickerstaff, for putting George Niang in the game. Thank you. Franz Wagner had a 14-point first quarter. Like, we needed it bad. We led 29-25 after one. It was nice to be ahead and not give up 30 points for a change, right, Penny? And, like, Paolo was kind of a little quiet out of the gate, but Franz kind of got it going. Like, he did get it going for game 3 in Paolo's gigantic game.
Yeah, Paolo seemed to be kind of easing into the game, and we really needed Franz to steady us and get us going, and he was tremendous in the first quarter offensively. And then, obviously, you never know what you're going to get from the complementary pieces, but Jalen started out and was consistent throughout with just massive three balls that really had no business going in, half of them that he shot and made. But we had enough in the first quarter. We're there, and now let's tighten up the defense, and that didn't happen.
So Cole opens up the second quarter with a corner three. It was my hope that it would get him going. It didn't really. He had a very inconsistent game. Some good moments for sure, but some very bad, like, getting exposed moments in this game as well. And then it's almost rhetorical at this point, but, like, how do we not stagger Paolo or Franz both second quarter and in the fourth? We didn't do it. Like, how? Like, he can't keep doing this, right? Like, it's just bad coaching at this point.
Yeah, again, it seems to be negligence and malpractice, and it's highlighted especially when the Cole and Joe and Mo minutes aren't very productive, which they weren't necessarily tonight, specifically in the first half, although Joe did get a call off the bench to end, I think, the second quarter for an offensive possession. But that just speaks to how much we were missing Gary defensively, as you mentioned, but even just standing in the corner to space the floor. Like, it was tough out there. And when you have Franz going off and Paolo coming off a tremendous performance himself, in an elimination game, you feel like you wouldn't want to have any time without either, you know, one of the two on the floor. But he continues to go with the substitution pattern, and the series is tied, so I don't know.
Yeah, no, it's – I mean, we've kind of gone away with it, but then again, maybe the series would be over by now if he was staggering them. You don't know. And these guys are young. Like, I know they're building their bodies up still, but, like, they're young. They can handle the minutes, I feel like. But, you know, that's – I don't know, that's maybe like a trainer, the medical athletic staff decision more than a coaching staff decision. I don't know. I mean, it's all cohesive at that point. Who, you know, what it's on Mosley in the end, but there's a lot of factors being put into those decisions. But we disagree, basically. So, yeah, I mean, as you mentioned, Penny, Fultz, Joe, Cole, Mo, they were struggling throughout the entire game almost, or at least large chunks of the game. And the Cavs just kept picking them apart and getting to the hole a lot, at least Fultz, Joe, and Cole in that instance. Cavs being 1 of 11 on threes and missing some open ones as well, and us only being up 40-36 midway through the second quarter was not good for us in my mind. We also didn't really take advantage when Evan Mobley rolled his ankle and he had to go out for a bit. Because even when he came back, like he wasn't quite the same. And in the second half, even though he made some good defensive plays like you'd expect Evan Mobley to do at center, like he still wasn't fully there. And like offensively, thankfully, he didn't bring much in the second half, I don't believe. So Suggs then gets a four-point play with 35 seconds left in the half. The Magic are up 53-49 at the break. I was very concerned because the Cavs, they missed a ton of threes and free throws, but we let them just walk into the paint constantly. Like, Mosley would not go deeper into the bench. Like, we did a nine-man rotation with Gary out, and we stuck to that nine-man rotation the rest of the night. It was 40-18 Cavs points in the paint. They were 1 of 14 on threes. We were 7 of 19 from threes at that point at halftime. But the Cavs, they shot 50% from the field because we let them walk to the paint. It was 40% shooting for us. You know, Donovan Mitchell at half was at 19 points, Garland 14, Franz 18 for us, Suggs 13, Paolo 10. Magic, they only had 5 points from their bench, 3 from Cole and 2 from Mo, while the Cavs also had 5 points from their bench. Okoro had 4, Caris LeVert had 1, but we expect more from our bench than Cleveland expects from theirs, really. So that was a concern. We did get the amazing Slatic as the halftime show, and his eccentric brother helping him out as well, assuming that's his brother, who knows. But I think I've seen the amazing Slatic probably like 40 times in over the past 20 years, and the guy just hit 65 years old. And look, I love me some Sandstorm music. Like, I can watch that guy's act this a million times, and I never get bored of it. Like, the guy's just a machine. And there was some fourth quarter fun there where stuff comes out to pump up the crowd with Slatic, and it actually helped out because it really cut the tension down a little bit for us, and that was all great. So, Penny, big Slatic fan. Like, obviously, you always want Red Panda because she's the top of the top, but Slatic pretty high up there for us anyway.
Pretty consistent, and to still be getting it done with that athletic performance at age 65, we should all be so lucky. But you know, we get to halftime. I told you felt the same way. It didn't feel sustainable. It felt very nerve-wracking. Obviously, the Cavs had missed a bunch of threes. Donovan Mitchell had missed three free throws already by that point. And all of the Magic's offense was getting generated from really contested three. You know, the threes from Jalen Suggs that we talked about felt like contested threes, and then very difficult mid-range shots that you're trying to manufacture. It felt like we were watching a lot of Paolo and Franz pick and roll, which was nice to see, but it didn't really result in anything. They were just hot potatoing it back and forth and not really creating an advantage out of it. I think we saw one play where it was like a flex cut designed for Paolo to catch on the block and then go to work, and then he fumbled it out of bounds anyway. So very concerning offensively, despite the lead. I told you before the second half started, I go, I think this 12 minutes is going to be our season. And then the start was not great, so I was glad to be wrong there.
Yeah, we got to talk about the fan. First off, shout out Cortez, who I saw at Casey's. Good seeing Cortez at Casey's before the game. But we got to talk about the fans. Obviously, the lower bowl, this has been consistent since the building opened in 2010. Like, the lower bowl has to do a better job of getting back to their fucking seats to start the third quarter. From a crowd noise perspective, it got good in the fourth, but like,
good, not great for the game, I thought.
Good, not great for the game is the way to put it. Like, it still doesn't rank as well as I thought Game 3 Raptors. It doesn't rank, like, the loudest, and Josh Robbins, I think, agrees with this, the loudest that building has gotten was the 2012 Pacers series when Redick hit that three late in Game 4, and we eventually went to overtime. But that's the loudest that building's ever been. And just at least from 109A, like, people around us, there were a lot of people that weren't screaming, clapping, like, just bringing the energy. Very late they did, but that had to happen way sooner, and we hit that lull in the third, and it was just kind of a pain in the ass. But I don't know if you had any fan thoughts on that.
Yeah, I mean, it was not the best fan performance. Obviously, there was a lot of excitement in the building. I was shocked. Half of our row ended up being pretty much empty for the game, so either secondary ticket didn't sell again, or it wasn't a full sellout, or whatever the case may be. But there was a little bit of energy lacking. But we talked about too, like, fans are looking for a reason to believe, but the players also need that fan support from the beginning. It's kind of a cohesive thing, and it ended up being just enough to thanks to the amazing Sladek and stuff and Dwight. Game ops didn't have the best game either, frankly.
No, look, at one point, like, the fans are organically starting a Let's Go Magic chant, which supersedes anything that you can make with the game board ops, noise-wise, the sound ops board at all. Like, and just the DJ, game ops folks, like, they were just putting music and other stuff over it and just let the Let's Go Magic chant just naturally bleed through. Like, for fuck's sake, it shouldn't be that hard to just read the room and just let it go. So, and I mean, I've had other fans tweet at me, be like, they've been doing it all series and it's just a pain in the ass and got to be better with that. Like, read the room, okay? Let the fans fucking use their voices. So the third quarter starts. Both teams used the same starters. Donovan Mitchell, he had 6 early points to open the third. And, again, Cavs just kept strolling to the paint. Mitchell and Strews hit threes real quick that saw us down 62-55. Just in a flash, we were down 7. Mosley, I thought, waited at least 2 minutes, way too long to call a timeout. Poor Franz was being left hanging out to dry trying to guard either Mitchell or Garland. Like, again, Franz, good defender, but not with guys that are 8 inches shorter than him and that fast to try and get around him. Mosley's first sub was Markelle Fultz, which at the time I didn't think felt right. Thankfully, Markelle changed my mind on that. I guess it could have been worse. He could have put Cole in, who was struggling even more, but it's just, again, Mosley just was not digging into the bench, and it didn't bite us in the ass, but it very easily could have. But I think what did help was Markelle actually dribbled with the ball a lot more, and it kind of got him into a rhythm. And instead of Fultz playing off ball or going to the corner where he's useless, like, he actually had the ball in his hands. I mean, Penny, we can get into it now, but assuming Gary Harris can't go, like, Fultz is probably the guy you start game 7, right, just from – a floor general perspective, if anything else.
I mean, I thought he was the guy to start in game 6, so what do I know? But we had talked about this during the game as well, even in the minutes in the first half that Fultz was on the floor. Paolo was still bringing the ball up the floor, which seemed counterintuitive. Like, if you only have so much energy in the tank, why are you wasting it trying to initiate the offense with Paolo and having Markelle hang out in the front court already? So I thought that was part of it. I had talked about, you know, the defense, the perimeter defense was poor. They were parading to the rim at will pretty much. I go, if you're going to sacrifice the defense, give Mo a shot as that fifth guy. Never happened. Probably the right move not to. But as you mentioned, Mosley was not going to go deeper into the bench. So you're going, how are we going to fill this? Is it going to be J.I.? He wasn't very productive. Is it going to be Markelle? Is it going to be Cole? Ended up going Markelle in the midway through the third quarter. And that ended up really jump-starting the comeback and gave you kind of that cushion to experiment a little longer with Cole later in the game as well. So Markelle really availed himself well in the second half, I thought, and hit a huge layup and a pretty big pull-up mid-range jumper too that it has become the patented Markelle fold shot now.
Yeah, I mean, Markelle might be playing himself into that second contract, honestly. Like, it's – look, he still has, though, many lapses where it doesn't seem like he's doing much and he's just kind of just floating out there. But when he's engaged like he was in key moments tonight, like, he's at minimum worth a guy that you want coming off your bench. And everybody loves Markelle. Everybody wants Markelle to succeed. It's going to be tough for him to be a successful NBA player without a consistent jump shot. But for what he brings – if you let him play around with the ball and just kind of put guys in good positions, like, he's valuable. So, but during the third, it was looking a little murky there because, you know, we were down a bit, and it, the energy was not where you wanted to see it. As thank God this guy in this car right now is finally pulling out, as he's been sitting with his car idling for like 10 minutes. But Paolo and Suggs hit threes. The Magic were only down 66-65 at that point. Again, it helped that Markel was handling the ball. It then gets really chippy with Niang. Just a lot of physical stuff, a lot of physical plays, some gyration shit going on. The Magic were down 78-73 as Mitchell Euro stepped his way into the paint right towards the end of the period. Yeah, I mean, we're down five going into the fourth. Again, I already mentioned there's no Paolo or Fons to start the fourth period. The second unit held its own somehow for a little bit. Like, we're down 78-75, and then we go up 79-78 on a ridiculous Cole Anthony, what can I can only describe as a spinning lofted layup that banked in. Like, it was, it felt like one of those where he wanted to cock back, and then it ended up just becoming just a layup that just kind of dropped in. It was really weird to describe from our viewpoint. And thankfully, once we went up 79-78, that's when Franz and Paolo checked back into the game. Mosley left Cole in the game instead of Fultz. You disagree with that decision, right?
I thought we both did at the time that Cole obviously made a shot and made a big layup, but we were sacrificing so much on the defensive end, and obviously Garland and Mitchell, I mean, by that point, were hot, so it was tough.
At that point, then, Mitchell is really just rolling. I don't know how many points he scored in the fourth, but it was a lot. He's just crushing everyone as Donovan Mitchell. Like, the Magic were down 84-82 with 7:28 to go. We then kind of had that controversial moment where Suggs hit a three, but instead of it being an and-one four-point play opportunity, he got called for an offensive foul for kicking his legs out, which I thought was bullshit. I would have challenged it. I don't know. What do you think, man? Because it looked like a legitimate foul, or even just leave it as a no call, but he's not kicking his legs out at all.
Yeah, from our vantage point, I mean, it wasn't a straight up and down catch and shoot three. He's moving on the catch, and his body is taking him that direction anyway. Who knows if it would have been overturned? And thankfully, we did have the challenge. I believe that was at the start of the fourth quarter and the comeback, the out of bounds overturn. So that was a good one where the Magic actually had the challenge available and thankfully won the challenge to get possession there. But that was one of those calls, and the Mo Wagner no call, a couple of wild swings that did not go in our favor, and I think it says a lot about the team that they were able to persevere there.
Yeah, and then it got really weird after that, because then we're on a 2-on-1 break, and Suggs wedgies a 3-pointer, and I'm just like, oh, fuck, are we going to lose this game now because of that? Again, I would have rather have had Markel or Isaac in instead of Cole, but we just stuck it out with Cole, and it ends up mostly working out. I mean, look, we situationally, like, Isaac does get back in for defense, like, late in the game, but, you know, it's 84-84. Cavs have the ball with 5:31 to go, and, I mean, I can go through the sequences here a little bit here because it's just nuts. Like, Mitchell gets the 40 points on a driving layup to make it 86-84 Cleveland. We then start playing the free throw game where Franz is hitting free throws. He ties it. it's just absolutely wild. Suggs hits a 3-pointer to put him at 21 points, and the Magic up 89-86 with 4:21 to go. So he went from should have gotten a 4-point play, wedging a 3-pointer, to he buries a 3-pointer to put us up 3 with 4:21 to go. Mitchell ties it up with a crazy step-back 3 of his own. He's on 43 points to make it 89-89. Paolo Banchero, clutch as fuck, pull-up 3-pointer of his own, 92-89, big boy shit, 3:39 to go. We then have that instance where Mitchell, and this might have been where it really was leaning towards Magic, where Mitchell drives into the paint. Wendell blocks the shit out of it. It was Wendell's, I think, only block of the game. Cole gets the rebound. Other way, Banchero driving layup. We're up 94-89, 3:05 to go. Paolo's on 23 points at that moment. And That was also where he got and one fouled. So Paolo, even though he missed the free throw, we're still up five with 3 minutes to go. And I don't know. I'm feeling pretty good there. I'm worried. I'm scared shitless of Mitchell. Like, I think I told you even before that, like, Mitchell can have 50 points. I just want the win. And it was just pure coincidence that Mitchell ends up hitting exactly 50 points. But I don't know. What do we think at that point, at that stretch, going into that three-minute timeout?
I mean, you feel a lot better being up a possession than down at that point. Yeah. And ends up being two possessions on Paolo back-to-back, you know, really taking over the game. At this point, we haven't said anything about it, and I feel like it – Wendell had a monster game for not doing anything really in the counting stats. Didn't quite end up with a double-double. Didn't really make any threes. Had a couple missed opportunities at the end. But a lot of, even when he didn't secure the rebound, he did yeoman's work in the paint. And we wouldn't have won the game without his contribution. So at that point in the game, fourth quarter, I think you're feeling very, very confident, especially with the energy in the building after Paolo's three and then the and one that was converted.
Yeah, look, Mitchell gets another driving floater to cut our lead to three with 2:22 left. We're just getting offensive rebounds. Like Cole gets that huge offensive rebound off of Franz's three-point miss. And then on the other end, Mitchell finally misses a step back three. Like, we're up. Yeah, that was – oh, God, yeah. That was – the Cole rebound was the tip-in. That was the big one. That was the tip-in putback where nobody was around him on the right side of the baseline, thank God. So Cole had plenty of time to just look around, grab – like, he's in midair. He grabs the board, goes up, rebound it, putback finish, and we're up 96-91. That's when Mitchell thankfully misses the step back three. Paolo, free throws, buries both of them. We're up 98-91 with 1:45 to go. Then you're really starting to feel good. But then, of course, Mitchell gets another driving floater layup. Puts Mitchell on 47 points with a minute 30 to go. We're up 98-93. Cole misses a three. Let's see. Cavs did get the rebound at that point. That's where Cole had that weird kind of – he tried to dive in for like a rebound, and that was the loose ball foul. But they weren't in the bonus, so it didn't bite us in the ass like it might have in any other situation. That's when Cole finally comes out. Isaac comes in with a minute five to go. We get Donovan Mitchell into a turnover that Paolo had a really great steal on. It turned out to be Paolo's only steal of the game, I think. But our swarming defense finally kind of paid off at that point. And then just offensive rebounds were just big because Paolo, he missed that little 14-foot turnaround jumper with 36 seconds left. Well, we're up five. Isaac got a rebound. Mitchell then gets a take foul on Paolo because Isaac kicked the rebound out. At that point, the clock's against Cleveland, so they had to finally foul us. So Mitchell had to foul Paolo. Paolo, again, hitting both free throws. That got him up to 27 points. It's 193 with 28 seconds left. And at that point, you're like, all right, I think we got this. Mitchell hits a step back three, cut it to 196. It gives Donovan Mitchell's 50 points. Don't care because we would get the win. At that point, it's just a free throw game. Like Suggs is splitting free throws. I don't care. You know, Cavs, they ran out of time at that point. You know, the Magic, they win 103-96. And game seven, baby. Get the Zaza Pachulia videos out. Put him in a Magic jersey as he should be. But we won, man. 103-96. We've had two close games. We went from four blowout games in a row, essentially, or at least not very competitive games down the stretch, to a one-point heartbreaker loss in Cleveland, game five, to we win a really squeaker tight game by seven, and now we got game seven coming up. I'll go through the box score, but apparently Paolo and Franz are one of three groups of 22-year-old men or younger to drop 25 points in the same game. So it's Paolo and Franz, and then it's Ja Morant and Jaren Jackson Jr., and then you got to go to like Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook on the Oklahoma City Thunder. And then the trio of Paolo, Franz, Suggs are the only 22-year-old or 23-year-old younger guys to drop 20-plus points in the same playoff game, and there's only two other trios that have done it, and they're both from those Oklahoma City Thunder teams. It's Durant, Westbrook, Harden, and it's Durant, Westbrook, Serge Ibaka. That's it in NBA playoff history. So, you know, you get the 22 points from Jalen Suggs on 7 of 16 shooting, but he hit 6 of 13 threes, the Jalen. Somehow that guy pulled out 6 threes out of his ass. It was unbelievable. But Franz Wagner, 26 points, 7 of 16 shooting, only 1 of 5 on threes, but Franz was 11 of 11 from the free throw line. Big time from him. Paolo, not a terrible shooting night after all. 9 of 20 from the field, 9 of 20, 2 of 5 on threes, 7 of 10 from the free throw line. I'll take it. He had 27 points from the game. Jonathan Isaac was scoreless in this game. He started and played 23 minutes. Wendell Carter Jr., again, it doesn't all show on the stat sheet, but he really kind of battled his ass off, really. In 35 minutes, Wendell had 11 points on 4 of 11 shooting. A really bad 1 of 7 shooting from 3, so you got to clean that up going into Game 7 and the 9 boards. But, yeah, I mean, our bench, Markell, 3 of 6 from the field, 6 points. He had the game-best plus 13 was Markell. And this time it abides, you know, 22 minutes plus 13. He really earned that stat. Mo Wagner, 1 of 5 from the field, 2 points. Joe Ingles didn't shoot anything. He played 8 minutes, scoreless from the field. Cole Anthony in 18 minutes, 4 of 10 from the field, 1 of 3 on threes. He had 9 points. Very inconsistent, kind of tough to look at times there. Cavs, it basically comes down to three guys. Donovan Mitchell had 50. Darius Garland had 21. Donovan Mitchell, 22 of 36 from the field, 3 of 9 on threes. Garland, 10 of 17. We can't let him do that to us in Game 7. 21 points, 1 of 4 from the field, but that was a pretty efficient Garland game. And the only other Cavalier to score double figures was Max Strus with 10 points, and most of that was probably in the first half, if not all of it. Cavs bench, they got 10 points from their bench. That's it. Points in the paint, Cavs kicked our ass, 66 to 38 points in the paint. Second chance points, though, Magic 15 to 2 second chance points. That was immense. Fast break points was just about even. And this was a game where the Magic made more threes. Magic 11 of 36 from three, 30.6%, which is great because we shot just under 40% from the field. So the threes kind of saved our asses there and the free throws. Because we were 22 of 26 from the free throw line, and we deserved all those. Cavs were 5 of 10 from the free throw line, and Donovan Mitchell missed 3 of those. Cavs were only 7 of 28 from the three-point range, so 25%. They made 4 threes less than us. They took 8 threes less than us, but they shot 49% from the field. And then, do I look at rebounds? Yeah, Magic had 10 more rebounds than Cleveland. We won offensive rebounds 15 to 7. What from all that stands out to you, Penny?
Well, the biggest thing is that you're not going to get a lot of second chance points as the Cavs when the primary shot is a layup. I mean, they, as you mentioned, they soundly kicked our ass in terms of getting into the paint and scoring in the paint. But Magic winning the rebounding battle is always a key in this series, and a surprising one based on kind of the regular season for how the teams operated. But, you know, you've called it lately. It all comes down to the three ball. Obviously, we were hitting tonight, but we were getting shots in volume, and Cleveland got, let's face it, great looks. I mean, wide open looks from three that didn't go. If they made, three more of them, they, you know, by virtue of the numbers, they win the game. So I feel like we did dodge a bunch of bullets, but also I think that leads to optimism for Game 7 that there's a lot left on the table. There's a lot of meat left on the bone for the Magic to kind of get at here. And to win an elimination game when you're not playing your best basketball, pretty exciting.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, Yeah, we can talk Game 7 real quick. So I just have some factoids. So the Magic have only played in 3 Game 7s in franchise history. Sunday will be the 4th. We're 2-1 all time in those. 1995 Eastern Conference Finals, we slaughtered the Pacers at home in that Game 7. Go cry, Reggie Miller. 2003, round 1, we blew the 3-1 Pistons lead and lost in Detroit. 2009, second round, we won in Boston. It's the Hito Turkoglu pizza game. Gary Harris has played in 4 Game 7s his NBA career. He is 3-1 all time. Joe Ingles has played in 2. He's 1-1 all time. No other Magic players have been in a Game 7 until Sunday now. So let's go win on Sunday, buddy. Psychologically, there's also an interesting twist to this because the Magic have to pack almost a week's worth of clothes now, because if the Magic win Game 7 in Cleveland at 1 p.m., then they have to fly straight to Boston instead of coming back home, because Game 1 of that second-round Celtics series would be Tuesday night in Boston. I like that little twerk.
Yeah, you do.
So, all right, Game 7, man. What do we think? Because, honestly, Mitchell dropping 50 tonight makes me more optimistic for Game 7 because he has barely a day and a half to recover, one. Mobley, ankle-wise, it could be an issue for him, maybe. Maybe Jared Allen starts, but that could be a bad thing for them. I don't expect Gary Harris to play. I'm with you. Like, Fultz should start on Sunday at this point. If you're not going to start, like, Anthony Black or Caleb Houston or any of that, like, Fultz should start. Game 7 thoughts, buddy.
Well, we talked about this. I think the 1 p.m. start time is a benefit for the Magic based on whatever residual ankle tweak has happened with Evan Mobley. Less time to recover and get treatment in. I don't know how much laundry plays into it and packing, but it can't hurt. I think it's high time to call back our series predictions. I did predict the Magic to win in 7 games. You've gotten to the point now where variance plays, and I feel really confident that we survived the Game 6. We got basically nothing from the bench. Cole Anthony has not had a good game yet. Obviously, he had a big putback tonight and hit a 3, etc. Markel still has some stuff that he hasn't done that he's capable of doing. Mo's coming off a 2-point game. Joe didn't even shoot. I think that you're going to get more from the bench. We're due one game where a couple of non-stars pop off, and I have confidence that one of Franz or Paolo will push that 30-point mark. And I feel like that should be enough to get the win. Where do you sit as we approach Game 7 on Sunday afternoon?
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, we're going 9-man rotation again, unless Gary's playing. Like, all the pressure's on Cleveland, too, and I feel like that's going to just kind of help us a little bit more, maybe get a few shots to drop in, because we really were this freaking close to winning Game 5. Like, this series could technically be over now, but you went from you got your ass kicked Game 1 and 2 to you probably should have won Game 5 to now it's like you're kind of playing with house money here and all the pressure's on Cleveland. Like, you've had an amazing season. We've grown so much just from this. I'd like to grow more by winning a Game 7 and getting to play Boston in the second round, but we've really, really come a long way just in this series alone. And Cleveland, I know I keep saying it, Cleveland's this close to just wilting away, and just we're going to break them. I think we're going to break them. And we're due for a great first quarter. Yeah, the Cavs are maybe due a super hot 3-point shooting night, and he might get it in Game 7. But our defense has held up enough to where maybe we can hold them off one more game. And, you know, I don't want to make a prediction or any of that stuff, but I really think that we're gonna figure it out. We're gonna pull it out, and that's all I got, buddy, man. Let's go win Game 7. You got anything else before we get out of here? It's just before midnight, so Hourglass is about to shut the doors on us.
I just the team had chances where no one would have blamed them for wilting in Game 6, and they didn't. I think that speaks volumes, and I feel really confident in Game 7. Let's go get a series win. Let's steal it.
Yeah, buddy, let's do it. That's going to do it for this episode. If you're still listening, we thank you very much for your time. We are the longest running Magic podcast show in existence, so any added support is much appreciated. Subscribing, rating the show highly, positive comments, they all help this podcast ranking immensely. Tweet us any of your questions and feedback. Penny, what's your Twitter handle?
At Spencer Strode.
And I am at Papa Giorgio MBO. And with that, take care. Let's go Magic. Game 7, baby.